transgenderism, answering the question, do I have the wrong parts, meaning our parts of our body? And I read to you from Psalms 19. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. On the issues that we talk about these afternoons, some of these issues are things that are in the news, they're in our culture, in our society, and we have to think about them. Now, on some issues, you think about it, you hear it, and you think in your mind, that's crazy, that's ludicrous, that's silly, and you may think, I'm glad I don't have to deal with it. You just think it's just dismiss it as stupid. And while there are some views and theories and things out there that are that way, that is no answer to the problem. It's no answer to the question, because the question is going to come to you at some point about some of these issues. And so transgenderism, do I have the wrong parts? That's the question. By parts, we mean sexual parts of our body, the anatomical sexual parts of our body. So transgenderism, do I have the wrong parts? The answer to this question is no, you don't have the wrong parts. If you were born with male parts, then you're a man. If you're born with female parts, you're a woman. So that's the answer. The answer is, were you born with the wrong physical parts? Does your soul not match your body? The answer is no. The answer is no. Now let's talk about the issue and then answer some questions that arise from this issue. And you probably have some questions come in your own mind along the way. Now, the word transgender is an unusual word. Maybe a word you've known before, some different terms, transsexual. Maybe you've heard that before. When I was a kid, we used to hear about transvestites, you know, somebody cross-dressing, a man trying to be a woman trying to be a man. You don't hear those terms anymore. Now they've been replaced by transgender. And the reason you don't hear transsexual or transvestite anymore is because those were terms that were associated with the mental illness. And no longer is that the case. Now the term is transgender. Transgender means this. It means transgender is denoting or relating to a person whose sense of personal identity and gender does not correspond with their birth sex. I'll give you the definition one more time. Transgender is denoting or relating to a person whose sense of personal identity and gender does not correspond with their birth sex. Now, this is a new term, and terms have to be understood and probably defined that way we know how to deal with them. Now, notice in the definition of the word transgender, we see that gender and sex are separated from each other and are treated like two different things. And that's because in the new view of personal identity and self-truth, it is. Nowadays, they're telling us that one's gender and one's sex are two different things. I was listening to Lawrence Krauss. You've heard me say his name many times. He was giving a lecture on theoretical physicism. And somebody asked him, he said, science proves everything. We go by science. We follow the data. And one of the students raised their hand and said, well, what about transgender people? What about the science of that? If they are scientifically tested and found to be male, but they claim to be female, which is true. I've never seen him back up on anything. I've listened to probably 30 or 40 hours of his lectures, read one of his books. I never seen him back up before. But on that issue, he walked right backwards and said, well, there's a range of gender. A range of gender. Think about that. A range of gender. They're more male to less male. More female to less female. A range of gender. A spectrum, he says. And he gave some more of these double talk and then kind of backed away from it to say that gender basically was an identity and a social construct. A social construct. Which gives us some idea of the shifting morality of our nation. That is you and I. I'm saying we like I'm an old man. But I feel old. We grew up with sex and gender being the same thing. But in this new reality, they say that sex is biological and gender is mental. Sex is biological and gender is mental. What they're telling us now is that gender is a social construct that's based on your biological formation. For instance, if you are born with a penis, you get gender classified as a male. And if you are born with a vagina, you will get classified as female. But your sex and your gender may not be aligned. In this worldview, you may be male anatomically, but female in your gender or your identity, or vice versa for females. To make it easy to understand, if that thinking is kind of unusual to us, to make it easier to understand, sex is what you are, and gender is what you feel you are. So sex is what you are today, but gender is what you feel you are. One of the ways to try to fix this problem of having a sex that's different than your feelings is to give men who think they are women hormones to cause them to be less masculine, and then give to women who think that they are men hormones to make them more masculine. And if a person desires it, and if they have the money and the insurance to cover it, they could undergo a surgery called sex reassignment surgery. And I'll tell you about this in a little bit. They've changed the name of sex reassignment. It's no longer sex change operations or sexual reassignment surgery. They've given it a whole new name, which is kind of interesting. A decade ago now, 10 years ago, this kind of thinking, if you were a man but you felt like you were a woman, 10 years ago, they called it gender identity disorder. Gender identity disorder, and it was classified as a mental illness. It was a psychiatric disorder that called for psychiatric treatment. Psychiatric treatment means you have a mental illness. There's something wrong. Gender identity disorder is what it was referred to. And that meant that you needed psychiatric treatment to help you cope with or be at peace with your birth sex. But a few years ago, they changed the designation from gender identity disorder to a new term called gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria. The reason for this was that in order for people who had gender dysphoria to get access to insurance coverage to pay for the hormone therapy or the surgeries they needed, the medical profession had to make these people look less mentally ill and more biologically ill. Because if you've ever had experience with this, getting antidepressant medications or something like that, insurance doesn't want to pay for mental disorders, for counseling. Insurance doesn't like to pay for that. They'll pay for biological problems, surgeries, blood pressure medicines, diabetes stuff. They pay for that, but mental illness medications and treatments, they don't like to pay for. And so they had to reclassify it to make these persons who are mentally ill seem to be more biologically ill or less crazy, I guess you could say. Now, the idea of correcting a mental illness with surgery is reminiscent to me of the old lobotomies of old. That's what it sounds like. Sounds like the old lobotomy stuff. Now, the leading medical center in the United States, Johns Hopkins, after doing sex change operations from 1966 to 1979, in 1979 they stopped doing them. They were the leaders in the field. In 1979 they stopped doing them, largely because of the work of Dr. Paul McHugh in his research, and he was a psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins. He concluded that Johns Hopkins Hospital was fundamentally cooperating with a mental illness by taking people who were male that identified as female and doing a surgery on them to bring their body into conformity with their mental picture of themselves. He said that they were participating in a mental illness, that they're perpetuating the illness, making that person sicker than they already were. So they stopped doing the surgeries and encouraged people with this disorder to seek psychiatric help. But in the last 5 years, in this particular field of study, we've seen a massive change in public opinion that has resulted in a bullying tactic by social justice warriors, and the result has been that Johns Hopkins Hospital has now just relaunched in the last 2 years their sex reassignment surgeries. And the reason for this is because of the change of opinion, the change of view about gender. When they separated gender and sex, Pandora's box has been opened. Pandora's box has been opened. If you want to get some idea of how sad this is, there are young people in this country today, young women who feel like that they are men. They're anatomically women. They're female. They feel like they're men. And so they go take testosterone, and they try to start taking testosterone injections as early as possible. As early as possible to stop the pubescent changes that take place in a young girl as she enters puberty and she becomes a young woman. They want to stop that. Girls go through a change. They become more feminine. Their bodies change, the way they look, the way they feel about themselves, their cycles, and all those things that go along with that. They want to stop that. They want to stop it early so they can preserve the straight lines of the masculine figure. They want to stop that. What's very heartbreaking is to see that these young people, these teenagers who are taking these shots, testosterone, are worried that taking testosterone for prolonged periods of time may stop them from being able to bear children in the future. Now think about what I just said. Here is a young woman who says, I am actually a man. I'm male. I'm going to take injections to stop myself from becoming more female. But I want to be sure that my reproductive health is preserved so that if in the future I decide to behave as my real self and bear children, I want to preserve that power. Because the power to bear children is a power that's unique to a woman. A man cannot do it. Now, we can say on one hand, what kind of wacko world is this? Well, I say the same thing. What a strange and weird world it is to live in. But my friends, that's the saddest stuff that I can really think of. I mean, that's sad that these people are so blinded by their fallen nature to do themselves that kind of harm. They're to be pitied and prayed for, that God would give them eyes to see and ears to hear the truth. That God would deliver them from that. It's a horrible, horrible thing. Luckily, America is still old-fashioned enough that the government won't allow some of these treatments to take place on children when they're very small. The leading physician in America about this is a pediatrician in Massachusetts. He maintains that a child's sexual identity, if they're 4, 5, or 6 years old, if your sons begin to say they're girls begin to say they're boys, at that age, they should immediately receive corrective hormone therapy as young as possible. In countries like Holland and the Netherlands, Norwegia, what place is Norwegians? Norway! Some of these countries, a child, they can go to their teacher at school and say that they're a boy, that they're a girl, or vice versa, and immediately the parents are not allowed to tell the child, no, you're not. No, you're not. The parents are not allowed to do that. That violates those children's rights, and those children, before they're even old enough to walk themselves to the store, are able to make a decision about having that kind of treatment. America is still... We're still a long ways from that. That's what it's like in other countries, and that's what they would like to have here before it's all over with. Now the culture that is loud and proud has demanded equal rights, gender rights, at all cost. In fact, the new name for sex change surgeries is now called, this will blow your mind, gender affirmation surgeries. Gender affirmation. And what that means is bringing the body into conformity with the mind. With the mind. Think how that would work under normal circumstances. You ever think of yourself differently than you are? I think of myself sometimes as still being 17 or 18 years old and robust. Vigorous, you know, and pliable, and I don't get hurt anymore. What if I want to go to that doctor and say, hey, I want to get overhauled for I want to get made 17 again. What'd you say, Brother Gerald? Brother Gerald says, where do I sign up? He wants to go back to being 17 again. Yeah. We all would like that, but it can't happen. In our normal circumstances, people would just say that's ridiculous. Gender affirmation surgeries. Now let's talk about the theology of sex as gender and gender as calling. Sex as gender and gender as calling. Now biblically, a person's social gender is identified by his or her anatomical sex, that is, your body parts. In plain talk, I apologize for just plain talk here. If you have a penis, that means you're a man. If you have a vagina, that means you're a woman. Which means that as a man, you will fill only the roles that your gender permits you to fill, and the same for a woman. In example, only men can be fathers, only women can be mothers. Now we're talking about in a normal procreative function, those are the roles that men and women have, fathers and mothers. It means that you will only, as a man, you can fulfill the role of husband. And as a female, the role of wife. It means that as a male, you'll fulfill the role as son. As a female, as daughter. Each role has blessings and burdens. Being a man has blessings. Being a woman has blessings and burdens. Both of them. Both of them. When you were born, I'm going to get back to my notes here, stay with these things. Humans are created by God with one or the other anatomical sex. And that sexual identity marks the person's gender calling. Your anatomical sex, the parts you have, tell us what your gender is. God has done that. That's how you're to serve God. God made you a man, you serve God as a man. God made you a woman, serve God as a woman. Doing all the things that God has allowed you in that context, in those lanes. Now, when I use the word calling, I mean that God has called you to be his servant as a man or as a woman. And that God has made that obvious by giving you anatomical features that declare to the world from the day of your birth where you fit in to your society from the day you were born. The individuals may experience a vast array of traits and psychological inclinations which are atypical to society's expectations for the associated gender. Now what that means, just a little plainer talk, is that not all men are like John Wayne. Not all men are like Jimmy Stewart. Now, you guys know who those people are? Yes. Maybe there's a generational shift here. Not all men are like Matthew McConaughey, however he is, or Brad Pitt. They're all different. Mark Harmon, George Clooney. They're all different. Rocky Balboa. What's his real dumb name? Sylvester Stallone. Carolyn has a big poster of him at her house. Not all men are the same. Some men are rough and gruff, and some men are not. In the Bible, we had two sons, Jacob and Esau. Jacob's a very hairy dude. Not Jacob. Jacob is smooth. Esau's hairy. Different interests, different inclinations, different traits. Same with women. Not all women are like, I can't think of female stars all of a sudden. First one I thought was Maureen O'Hara. Not all women are like Maureen O'Hara. Not all women are like other women. They're not all like Valerie. They're not all like. Look at the women in our church. Everybody's different. All the guys are different. There are traits we have that are atypical. Some guys are more sensitive than other guys. Some guys are more emotional. Some guys are hard. Some women are more sensitive and emotional. Some women are not. It varies quite a bit. And this is God's doing. This is God's doing. People make social assumptions about genders. Social assumptions about what is typical for a given gender are not authoritative. It is the mark of God's goodness that he grants to men and women traits and qualities in a variety of combinations, some that are more typical, some that are more atypical. But that's the way it is, what God has given it to us. As Bible-believing Christians, we believe that persons are called by God to serve according to the gender indicated by the individual's anatomical sex. Why do people say they're transgender then? Is it just because that they're jealous of another of the opposite gender? A woman, she wants to be, she's jealous of what a man can do and wants to be a man. Is that why? I don't think so. You got a question, Darren?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Because it ain't like, it's not like they want to flip-flop sexes. It's like they just want to have anything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need a ring. It's not like all the women feel like they want to be men and the men want to be women.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be a woman one day, a man one day, a cis man the next day. It's like they don't really have no idea what they want.
You're right. Darren brings up an excellent question and statement, really. Maybe I can answer it in this next section. Why do people say that they are transgender? Well, the answer is complicated, but it's not an unknowable answer. The complications come from something very fundamental, the fall of man. The fall of man. You see, the fall of man is not just us becoming guilty before God as sinners. The fall of man has corrupted mankind totally. Listen to the London Baptist Confession. Under the fall of man. This is chapter 6, paragraph 2. Our first parents, that's Adam and Eve, our first parents fell and became wholly defiled in all the faculties and parts of soul and body. Of soul and body. The fall affects all the faculties and parts of the soul and body. This means that man is totally corrupt, and we call it total depravity. And these defilements of that fall are manifested in sinful actions and physical deformities, which have multiplied in variety and extent throughout the entire human race, including moral and biological confusing, impacting either sex. The reason why some women feel like they're men or want to be men, or vice versa for the men wanting to be women, it's because of the fall. They're in a state of rebellion against God. And as such, they're very confused about what they really want. They're all in the pursuit of happiness. I think that's the statement that can be made of all people everywhere. They just want to be happy. They're trying to find a way to be happy. Just like for some of you, maybe some days what makes you happy is a cheeseburger. But tomorrow what's going to make you happy is Chinese food from China Express down here, the greatest Chinese restaurant in all of Lawton, Oklahoma, and the world, in the galaxy. Right, Darren? Because the salt shakers are all stuck to the table. But some days it's a Coke. Just think, this is just on a very basic level. Some things are going to make you happy today. They're not going to make you happy tomorrow. People are in a constant state of confusion, trying to find something to please them and satisfy them. Look at how many people pursue certain hobbies for so long. I'm into golf. I'm into golf big time. I'm golfing. And then all of a sudden, I'm not interested in golf anymore. Now I'm into racquetball. And so I I'm into racquetball. Or I'm into hunting. Now I'm into fishing. Then it was into radio-controlled cars. I'm not saying I was interested in any of these things myself. I'm just illustrations. Women sometimes are very into sewing, like Miss Kathy back there. But I'll bet in sewing, Brother Larry will probably testify to this if he's brave enough. Sometimes maybe Miss Kathy was interested in making quilts. Did that happen to you, Miss Kathy?
Not yet.
Brother Larry, if she brings up the Q word, just move out. Making quilts. My mom used to make bunny rabbits in these little dresses. And then she got to where she made quilts, hand quilting, and all the junk that goes with that. And then patchwork quilts, double wedding ring quilts. Now she's out of that. Now she's into wedding dresses and dancing dresses and party dresses and cocktail dresses and the whole nine yards. That's what she does. Interests change, don't they? Interests change. It's a part of that wondering, Darren. I think it's connected to that confusion there. You see, it is the fall that created in mankind the feeling of not being at home in one's body. The marks of the fall are manifested in gender identity issues, just as it is for most of us in our lying, stealing, lusting, coveting, pride, and immorality. Not all sinners are tempted to steal as strongly as others. I told a story here one night about I was delivering newspapers here in Lawton. I saw a guy's brand new tennis shoes on his porch, and I thought, I need those tennis shoes. And after the service, Miss Josephine, she said, you really are totally depraved, aren't you? You heard that, Miss Josephine? You're at the back. She said something about it. And, you know, she's like, she'd never be tempted to steal shoes in her life. But I was. What makes a difference? Well, she has comfortable shoes. No, it's just everybody's different. Your besetting sin is not my besetting sin. And my besetting sin is not yours. Not all sinners are tempted to steal as strongly as others, just as not all men are as prone to sexual sins as others are. In each person, the fallen nature shows itself in unique ways. What we're talking about today is one of the ways the fallen nature of man is seen. When Adam and Eve ate of the forbidden tree, they rebelled against God. And from there, all people became sinners. And the evidence of their sinfulness began manifesting itself. And it changed as time passed. I'm reading to you now Ecclesiastes 7:29. Solomon says this, "Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions." Many inventions, many different ways of committing sin. Over the centuries, mankind became increasingly vile to the point that God saved only 8 people for himself and killed the rest of mankind with a flood. So everything's good now, huh? Noah gets off the ark, him and his wife and his 3 sons and their wives, and they get busy replenishing the earth with children. That's what they're going to do now. Everything's great. All the really bad people were killed in the flood. But what do we find out? It's in man. The fallen nature was present in Noah and his wife and their sons and their children, their offspring. 2 Peter Chapter 2, verse 22 says, "But it has happened unto them, according to the true proverb, the dog has returned to his own vomit again, and the sow that was washed to her wallowing in the mire." People are sinners by nature, and they sin because it's in their nature to sin. It's in their nature. Man's persistence in his pursuit of sin and God's long suffering has put us in a place today where we must respond to and think about these issues. That's not to say that these are new issues. Because if you read the book of Leviticus, you find out that there were all this sexual perversion of today was present back then too. Present back then too. I mean, the Bible actually has a commandment that says that women and men should not have sex with animals. That's in the Bible. God had to say that to people. You'd think that'd be something that's like, yeah, we get it. But no, God has to spell it out just to show you how depraved the nature is of man. I don't like having to think about stuff like this, and I know you don't like it either. I just want to live in peace and quiet and try to forget there are people in the world who are transgender. I see it on the news or read it on television and read an article about it. I always look to see where it's taking place at. Like school shootings. Whenever I see a school shooting, I always look to see if it's Oklahoma. If it's California, I go, yeah, California. I ain't surprised. It happened in Kentucky recently. And it may happen. I mean, we like things. As long as it's away from me, I don't want to think about it. We try to just pretend it doesn't exist. But we have to think about it because we'll face it in our families. We'll face it at work. We'll face it at school. We will face these kind of issues wherever it is that we engage with society. You're likely to find this kind of thing. Now, I want to ask you some questions. Ask and answer some questions. Now, these are not questions for you to answer. I'm going to ask them rhetorically. Then I'll give you the answer. And then we'll be done. Number one. If I struggle with gender identity, does that mean I'm not a Christian? Well, the answer is no. That means that you're a sinner, but your struggle with gender identity and your struggle with gender identity is on the same level as my own struggle with my temper and my lustfulness. Does it mean you're not a Christian? That's a burden you're bearing. Just like I bear the burden of my own sinful desires. It's difficult. You say, well, I don't know about that. Okay, well, think about the guy who was a drunk, gets born again. Was a drunk, got born again. You think he ever wants to drink again? Some guys will say, it got took away from me. Well, you're lucky. You're lucky because God, it doesn't leave everybody. You're blessed is what you are. God didn't take away from everybody. Thinking about this, brothers, those of us who were exposed to all kinds of sexual sins, sexual pleasures, and then we're saved, married, that old garbage is still floating around in there. The old desires that come back, still there. That's what Paul says, we're mortifying the body. We're saying no to those temptations. Working at it day after day. Same as for someone who struggles with gender identity. Same thing. Doesn't mean you're not a Christian. Doesn't mean that at all. Number two. What should I do if I have this problem? What should I do if I have this problem? Well, you need to submit to God's rule in your life. If he has given you an anatomical sex, which he has, then that is the sex and the gender he wants you to have. I don't mean that if you were a man and now you had yourself fixed up for a woman or vice versa, that that's how you live. That's not what I'm saying. If God made you a man, he intends for you to live as his servant as a man. If he made you a woman, live as his servant as a woman. That's your role. That's what you should, that's submission. Submit to his will and to him, and it is only in submission that you'll find peace. Now, we don't like to think about submission too many times, but it is in submission to God's will that you'll find peace. Submission to his will. Like kids. Let's start with kids and work our way up. How about that? So a kid, if they submit to their parents, will they have peace? Well, they're going to have some measure of peace. If they obey their parents, listen to this, kids. If you obey your parents, your freedom gets bigger. Isn't that wild? If I obey the rules, the chain gets longer. See? In submission to God's will. You know, as a Christian, God says things he doesn't want us to do, things he does want us to do. Submit to him. So, just submit to him and you'll find peace. Peace and obedience. He'll bless you. Sometimes God may take away desires for different things. There's blessing in that. As wives, submitting to their husbands. The wives, they get, I don't want to submit. I'm not going to be reigned over, ruled over. I don't think that godly Christian men want to be king, lord, and master over their wives. I don't think that's the way Christian men really are. It's not the way I am, and I'm a wonderful Christian man. Amen. Thank you. I was waiting, praying, and hoping for, but I thought I would get it from my own wife, but I didn't get it. That's what I get for giving her a hard time. Submission. Do wives experience peace and joy in submission? Certainly they do. It's a universal law. What about husbands who submit themselves to their wives? Like, well, wait a minute. Well, 1 Peter 3 says, husbands and wives submit themselves one to another. Yeah, there's blessings and peace in that. How about with the government? Submitting yourselves to the government, the laws of the land. Is there peace in that? Certainly. That's how it works, submitting to God. In Romans chapter 6, Paul tells us we should not and must not find our identity in our sinfulness or with our sinful past, but find our identity in the person of Jesus Christ. Our old man, the fallen man, is dead, and now we're united to him. Listen to Paul in Romans 6, 11 to 13. Likewise, reckon ye also yourselves to be dead indeed unto sin. Reckon yourself, that's count yourself, but alive unto God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, that ye should obey it in the lust thereof. Neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. And what he's saying is that we yield ourselves or submit ourselves to him. Our members, our body, ourself, we are his. We're yielding ourselves to him. That old life, that old identity is gone. That's sinful. Crucified. That's taken away. Now I identify myself as a Christian. And if I've been made a man, I identify myself as a Christian what? Man. And if I was made a woman, I identify myself as a Christian woman. I'm serving God in those roles. If God's made you a man, then you're to be his man. If made you a woman, you're to be his woman. And of course, this is true for both Christians and non-Christians. But non-Christians don't seem to care two hoots about what the Bible says. Have you noticed that? They don't care. But Christians should care. It's been more important to a Christian because we've experienced the grace of God and we want to please him. And if you're struggling with gender identity issues, you don't need to go it alone. You should pray and seek the Lord and submit to him. If you need someone to talk to, you should go to your pastor, to your parents, to your spouse, whomever it may be. Someone you can trust. And if someone does come to you with that kind of information, that kind of confiding in you, you should tell them the truth. You should help them. Help them with their messy situation. Sometimes they need somebody to talk to, somebody to pray with them, pray for them. Now, you can't get somebody to tell you stuff like this. But if somebody were to lay it on you, you should behave towards them like Christ would behave towards them. This is where we Christians, we fail sinners sometimes. We don't really know how to love and understand Christians like we ought to. I think we do know how to do it. Sometimes it just seems like too big of a task. We're like, I can't do it. It's just too enormous. I don't know what to do. When all, you know, you ever think about Valerie, sometimes she'll come to me and she'll tell me some problem and I go into fix it mode. Get out the screwdrivers, get out the wrenches. This is what you got to do and do this and stop feeling that way. And she'll say, Terry, I don't want you to fix me, you big knucklehead. Just listen to me and let me know that you love me. That would seem easier than doing a total rebuild, wouldn't it? A total overhaul. But it ain't. Because it's uncomfortable. Not uncomfortable to show her I love her, but it's a different realm. That's not what I'm accustomed to. Some of my friends will come to the phone and say, Terry, what do you think about this situation? They say three words and I start giving my opinion. When really all I got to do is just, you need to shut up for about half hour. Let them talk. I then really assess and advise. And this is where people in the world, these lost people, these sinners, these Christians who are struggling, we got to try to help them. If someone reaches out to you for help, treat them like Christ would. Treat them like Christ would. Tell them the truth and love them by trying to help them. Now I'll give you something more practical here. Number three, third question. If I work with a transgender person and I've known them on both sides of their transition, what should I do? This is something that I haven't had to experience, but you may, and I may in the future. As is the case with all people that you work with, you need to get along with them on a professional level. Not easy, is it? Odo, but you got to try to get along on a professional level. We're not saying you got to eat lunch with them. Ain't saying you got to take them out after work for a drink or buy them a birthday card or whatever. Buy them a drink. Buy them a milkshake. Is that better? We're not saying you got to become bosom pals with people. You got to get along with them on a professional level. If someone at my job asked me my opinion about transgender or stuff like that, I'd just say my opinion is private. And the reason I say that and my advice used to say that is because the culture we live in is becoming so electrified that you got to remember you're not obligated to tell anybody your private personal opinion. You are not obligated. See that? I have an opinion, but I'm keeping it to myself. Now, what we like to do is like to give a piece of our mind. But when you got to just, But I got my own view. And you know how it is at your work. Your everybody's situation is different. I say my opinion. About this, I would say my opinion is private. Because you know what? They could be trying to catch you. They're trying to catch you. You said, not the people at my job. Well, you never know. If I worked with a person who was Robert one day and the next day was Roberta, I think that I would say, hello, Roberta, the next day. I wouldn't try to insist that they go by their old name. I think I'd just say, hello, Roberta, because I just want to get along while I'm there. I just want to get along while I'm there. The whole unusual pronoun thing is something else. Because now there's this new pronoun idea where if you're not a man, you're not a woman, you're not comfortable being called either one, they want to be referred to as them. Them. And if I'm not mistaken, them is it's plural. Although them can sometimes be singular, it's rare. It's them. Calling him or her them would be odd. If somebody said, I want you to call me them from now on, I'd be like, okay, I'll try. But I know I'll mess up. Because it's not normal to us, is it? I try to get along. I don't know if I can remember to do it, but I'd try. I wouldn't want to cause a problem with my coworkers. I don't want to cause a problem. You may say, well, if I call them by that, if I do that, then aren't I approving of their sinfulness? Well, I think you could say to them this, hey, I'm going to call you whatever you like as a courtesy, but I don't want you to mistake it as affirmation. If it got right down to that, do you feel like it was violating your conscience? I think you say, I'm going to call you that, but it's just a courtesy. But you don't have to tell everybody when you're just being nice, do you? You ever tell somebody you work with? They say, hey, what do you like my new outfit? Great. But in your mind, you're thinking, I wouldn't be caught dead in that in a million. You're just being nice. It's just a courtesy. We're not telling you got to take them out for a drink. We're just saying you just got to get along. You just got to be nice. Friends, we've got to get along with people. I mean, we have found it possible to get along with heterosexual people that are as normal as we are, who are drunkards, dope heads, and have sex with somebody different every night, and we can get along with them. If you can get along with them, you can get along with somebody who is transgender. Number four. And this is where this is the end, I promise. When you start thinking about this kind of thing, you'll eventually get to thinking about the question of what about people who are, when I was a kid, we would say hermaphrodites or intersex. This means persons who are born maybe with gender markers of both sexes. Yeah. Of both sexes. Yeah, and it's a birth defect. That's right. You're right. It's a birth defect. There are people, and it's rare. I've never met anybody like that. It's rare. There are people who have birth defects or deformities that require sex assignment. And this is actually very rare. The American Medical Association says that 1 in 1,500 children in America are born with this abnormality that makes sex or gender designation impossible at birth. It's very rare. In the United Kingdom, it is so rare that they don't even make a record of it. I was blown away by that. The Office of Statistics in the United Kingdom, it's so rare in the UK, they don't even make a record of it. A person in that situation does not need sexual assignment or reassignment. What they're seeking, what they need, is sexual repair. They need to be repaired. When a child is born with a cleft palate, what do you do with a child with a cleft palate? They fix it. They're repairing it, right? It's a birth defect. It's damaged. They're repairing it. And a child who is born with deformed genitals or partially formed genitals or no genitals, the parents and doctors should conduct tests to see if these children are male or female. That's, I think that's XX or XY. Then they should do what is needed to help those children achieve that true identity. Because anything else is not a true identity. And so that's the answer to that question. And that's all I want to say to you about that. Maybe you have more questions leaped in your mind. There's a lot of things to think about. And I pray the Lord will help us as we try to address this issue and help others. I mean, we have this information. It may come across our path. I've gleaned a lot of help on this issue from a booklet written by the Synod of the Reformed Presbyterian Church of North America entitled The Gospel and Gender as Calling, Gender Identity. And I ordered some copies. I only have one copy, but I ordered some more copies. And if you wanted to get one and read it, very helpful information, a lot of data. It's like 60 pages long. The first section is about the issue itself of transgenderism in America and some of the thinking behind it. And then there's a section about gender as calling, how we should live as God's creation. And there's some advice in there for us in this world we live in. So, I made an edit here that I forgot to read to you. The intersex person, that's the new term for hermaphrodite, is intersex. It's difficult, it's very rare, and they say it's made more difficult because it's hard to know exactly at what point intersex begins. Because there's a, it's like the Greek text. Can you guys see the connection, the Greek text and gender? Well, in the Greek text, there's 5,000 Greek texts, okay? 5,000 ancient texts. And they say every difference between the texts has to be counted. So, like, you have one Greek text that says, in the beginning, God created heavens and the world. That's Genesis, but just print it to Greek. How about John 1:1? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So that's a Greek reading. Now, if you have a second Greek reading, it says, in the beginning, God, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In the beginning, although that's not a significant change, it is a change. And so it has to be counted as a change, as a defect, and as they count defects or changes, differences between texts. So at any kind of deformity in genitals in a child that's born could be counted as an intersex. It's hard to know where that exactly starts. Does it start all the way with having no genitals? There's a range of it there. It's hard to think about. Anyway, the last part I probably could have left off, and you guys had all been happy, wouldn't you? Yeah, I can tell. Oh, Carolyn just says, yeah. Yeah, big lug. Oh, is you, Glenda? Oh, Glenda, I always blame Carolyn for your mistakes anyway. Let's pray together, and we'll be dismissed. Father, I thank you for your word. And as we consider issues like this, I'm constantly amazed at